This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Darius Thomas.
Turn up the speakers louder.
And Karina Onglada.
I am the guard dog in this house.
Hey there, I know it's been a minute, but thank you for joining us as we kick off another season of the Creative Sports Podcast. As we get ready to flip the calendar into 2026, we wanted to take a moment to reflect on 2025. Yes, that means a conversation about AI, its impact and potential, as well as our opportunities. Where do we go from here, and how does it impact our craft? And of course, we also talk about our outlook for 2026 as creatives continue to tackle the increasing requests and workloads, and we strive to find the balance to not burn out. All right, I'm going to go to time.is first.
I'm on there. I'm there.
Who wants to call it?
Karina.
Nose goes.
All right, 28.
That was so bad. That was so bad. That's the quickest time we've ever done.
I love it.
Trying to keep you on your toes.
Hey, let's do it.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller FX, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit BallerFX on YouTube and get started today.
Great to see everyone. Great to see you guys and gal. It's been a long time.
I know. It's been a minute.
Unfortunately, we lost Brock, which is disappointing, but totally understandable.
No, we will never lose Brock. Brock, we love
him. He's a busy human.
Yeah.
Yes.
Got some great stuff going on. Man.
Well, all these new stadiums that are going up too. It's yeah.
He can't particularly say which ones, but we're going to shout him out.
He's definitely living the life, enjoying it, and working with the Chiefs too.
Yeah, I saw him at the Sunday night game.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's
shout
cool.
Out to that guy, man.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He worked there full time, and then now he lives there. So he does.
He moved there.
Yeah, he does freelance with them from time to time, engineering. I think maybe more than time to time. I think he does a lot of freelance with them. So
yeah.
Cool group. Good group.
Karina, what's this has been a great year for you? Or no? How's your 2025?
2025, I feel like it flew by. I feel like I say that every year, but
it's in 100-meter dash right now.
Yeah, it's been interesting, I think, from a creative standpoint. Really cool to see a lot of the generative AI trends and conversations and discussions and maybe fighting about Gen AI. But for me, it's been really exciting just to see how quickly things are evolving. Like, and also, I know there's a lot of like trepidation around the creative industry as well, and what all of this innovation means for creatives. So I think it's been an interesting year, but I think it's been a good one.
Yeah,
it was really cool to see you break down all the new stuff at IDEA. There's so much. Like, I know we work with Adobe all the time, but I'm kind of in my lane of After Effects, so to see like some of the Firefly stuff that you were showing and how people can use it, that was really cool to me. And you are a super polished presenter at this point near because of how many different presentations you've done.
You've been all over the place.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
She's almost in her bag to start bringing me as her personal like videographer and photographer. So
stop. It's really cool. I feel like in you know, the role I have, I get to talk with a lot of like different creatives and a lot of video people doing really interesting things. And Justin, I know you've like been focused on a lot of like automation, and we've talked about AI, and AI means so many different things right now. but it's really interesting seeing like the movement, at least with like the bigger organizations, and how they're trying to like lean in to automate more of the like really tedious processes that are part of the creative, like, you know, journey. So that's been really cool. And like just seeing how things are changing from that perspective of like, oh, I can rethink how I do anything, right? Like I can lean on ChatGPT to help me just get to an ideation stage faster, or just throw things at the wall. And you know, it's an interesting times. But Darius, what about you?
I'm gonna throw this nugget in there, and I want to hear what Justin was about to say. But AI now is all in, so that's what it stands for, all in.
I don't know about that.
You gotta be all in on the idea of it, right? Like I know that early on, like a few years ago, I tell people this all the time. AI has been around for a long time.
Yeah, forever.
Like we're just now giving it a name. So the time to like, oh, I'm not going to use it at all. And it's almost like you're not going to be able to run from it. So just lean into it a little bit.
It's funny because I feel like I probably use AI the least out of the three of us.
We're probably around the same.
You think so?
I probably use it like this much, like a little bit more than you do. But I'm very strategic.
Well, what are you using it for? Like, let's start there.
Me, myself?
Yeah.
So I use a program called, and I reached out to you maybe a year ago about like an editor, right? And so I use this program called Firecut to go in and clip down some of the longer pieces. Like if I go do a panel discussion or whatever, something to just cut out highlights. I probably use that one the most. I use some Claude AI, some ChatGPT, more in ideation stuff. I should probably use it more as I'm starting to lean into more LinkedIn posts and all that, just from a timing standpoint. So those are some of the main ones that I like will use. I think from an editing standpoint, I still haven't found a program that can do the edit the way that I would want it done. Like, here's all of this stuff. Do it, right? So still exploring. Well, you know, here's a, you know, here's 2 hours of footage. Make a 25-second, 30-second, 60-second recap with these things. Now, Opus does a good job of like highlight clips, but it you still, with all of these editing things, you still Opus have to click. Go in. Yeah, you still have to go in and tweak everything. But I will, like, if I'm doing something for a speaker, I can at least use it for
like captions. A rough cut. Yeah.
Captions and all that kind of stuff. So because it's, I don't think that we've trained the AI enough to go and say, here's how to write a story through video. You know, like, put this sentence and this sentence and this sentence. It's just not there yet. Do we want it to be there? Probably not. You know, I mean, on one
I
hand,
sure
yes,
don't. Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's like, you know, I think a lot of people are leaning into AI to try to save money so that they can, you know, oh, well, I'm going to use Opus Clip and, oh, I can just go get a camera. And
it's an easy button.
It's an easy button.
Yeah.
But it can, there's a lot, like AI can help you with strategy. AI can help you with structure. I mean, you always got to go back and check it just like you would an assistant. But it can help automate some things that maybe you weren't considering. But, you know, we still have jobs that we want to have or careers, right? So we just have to learn to incorporate AI and not just try to use it as a replacement mechanism. So. But it's all about profits now. So that's what everybody cares about. Sorry,
yeah,
Justin,
I
that
see
was a
it,
long response.
I see it as like a creative partner. AI is like my partner and I, as the human, ultimately like have the final say, final decision, final edit, right? And we as humans understand the goal of whatever we're trying to, you know, achieve and whatever we're working on, right? So that's how I look at it. But Justin, you were going to say something.
Oh, I don't remember what I was going to say initially, but I think if I was working for a team, I would definitely be using it more. Workflow, like when I was with the Celtics, I was trying to use it for workflow for tagging, because those are things that everyone that's creative do not like to do. It's monotonous going through and actually like typing out someone's name and logging footage and all that kind of stuff. That's it's hugely beneficial for that, speech to text. I know, Karina, you've highlighted some of that with Premiere. You can edit with the speech to text now. So that, like, if I was working for a team, I would definitely be leveraging it for all that. I think for me, from an outside perspective, I work with a number of different people over the course of the year, and everyone has their own rules and what they can and can't use. So for me, it's a lot harder to sit here and say, yes, I use it, or I throw it through this, because I also know that there's a lot of legal things that still need to be sorted out. So I don't want to get caught in the middle of that, or put one of my clients in a hard spot down the line if I do something that doesn't. But I also don't think I have a need for it as specifically for me and my business right now, of how I'm creating stuff. So
yeah. So how's your, you've had a busy year, Justin. A lot of you got a big announcement that you dropped, you know, that some people may know, some people may not. But you launched your templates app. Can you talk about that and the rest of your year?
Yeah, congrats on that. Exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's been something that I've wanted to build out. I've kind of done some piecemeal parts of it over the last year to try and like build up to it. But I decided I just needed to invest and work with a developer who was really good, and still continue to expand and explore what's possible with building templates that teams can turn around quickly. And a big part of that is allowing creatives to be at the forefront of all of it. Because I know there's, with the concerns of AI, I think automation is something that doesn't really get talked about enough, about how creatives can scale their work. Because really, when it comes down to AI, that's really the backbone of what I think a lot of people are hoping AI does for their business, is to scale their work or scale their creative. And there's definitely ways to do that without the use of AI. So that's when I'm trying to create a platform and an app that will allow teams to have creatives involved, and then free up the creatives to work on more custom content or deliver more content. Because let's face it, as creatives, we all like to be part of the creative process and not necessarily like the minutiae of, hey, we need this updated to say this today. We need this updated to say this today. So the app is really intended to allow social media creators or someone else on the squad that is not necessarily the designer or the motion designer to be able to turn content around without breaking the look and feel. Because that's usually where the juxtaposition is there's social media designers. If they create something, the creative department goes, ooh, I wish we would have done it this way. Or, you know, you're not creative, so send it to us. And then it puts more work on our plate. And so how we can create a system that makes both people happy while also limiting the handoff. So there's usually designer who sits there, you know, changes the score, hands it off to the social media team to post, and that process takes a little bit. So all my renders for quick turnaround content like that finish in under a minute, and so it's really a easy process and simple process where they can, it's like WYSIWYG, CSAY, I'm putting this in, changing this, drop downs, easy UI elements, and rendered out. They don't need to have an After Effects license or Adobe license to be able to do it. So it's trying to simplify and streamline everything for teams to create more content, because content is not slowing down. That's, you know, each year we go, there's more and more content requested at different times and different. And I'm not saying this is like a catch-all either, because there is custom content that needs to be created that won't work for this. I'm focusing on templates and things that are repetitive for teams to be able to make it once and then turn it over and let someone else tackle the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Like, I think I've told you this like before, like if I were working in college athletics right now or for any team, like having, because it's so tedious in yep. college, especially now college basketball is heating up, right? You got so many games. Oh, we need a final score. We need a halftime. Like, and you could have someone, whether there's an intern or sports information person, or my funny line that I like to use is a dead squirrel could use it, right? So it could be
stop
that
it
easy.
Right now.
Peter, don't come after me.
Oh, no.
but no, like something that simplifies and takes something off of your plate that I think a lot of times when higher ups are like, oh, we can get this, you know, going back to the AI conversation, we can get this and now we can, you know, remove that off of things that we need. And it's like, no, this person has a million things on their plate. You create things with AI or whatever that can take some of those off. They still have a huge amount of stuff on their plate, but it just takes the, you know, some of the tedious, small, minutia things off of the, off of whoever that is, whether it's a creative or any other staff member.
The people most likely to burn out, for sure.
Absolutely. Like, and we're not addressing that. It's like, how can we prevent burnout versus how can we add more to the bottom line? And, oh, this isn't as important. What's going to make us more money and make us more profitable? I think if we get back to a people first type of, and that's a whole other podcast episode, right? But I think our approach with using AI is wrong. But that's just me, that a person that cares about actual people versus someone who cares about how much money can I make?
Well, I mean, as we've seen with college football, that's everything's coming down to how much money can we make and how much money can we spend, apparently, too.
Yes, it is. It is a huge thing, but it's always
and
been
are
there.
You referring to like NIL there or
all of it? I mean, coaches players, salaries obviously going through the roof, which is good for them. That's great.
And they're being tasked with, you know, I remember.
But there's also creatives attached to
absolutely
those coaches that too that get thrown into a whirlwind of everything with changes and all of that too. Yeah. So that are probably looking at it and going, "Wow, there's so much money being tossed around for this program, and they're paying me this."
Right, doing the math on the percentage.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm being asked to do even more, and just hey, we just don't have it. It's like we have it. But it's just not for me.
Right.
And I would be fine with somebody say, hey, we got it. We just don't have it for you. We don't see, like, we value the work that you do, but we don't value it with a dollar. We'll have a pizza party. Like, I was talking to somebody, and they were like, look, cut all the fluff and BS and pizza party and all this and put that in our pocket. Like, we need more funds. As bills are growing, as insurance is getting through the roof. And these are like overall problems, not, you know, this isn't political. This is just straightforward. Everything is becoming expensive. So that's how I look at it.
My brain is going places and
yeah,
I want to discuss
something. You're staring into
our
soul right now. I wish people could see how you just leaned into the screen and was like, do I want to go there? I don't know.
You know what? I don't think I want to go there, but I will go there because I think, you know, in recent news, Michigan's football coach, I think, is a relevant topic on this, right? Where if I'm a creative and I'm connected in some capacity to this program and the coach is doing what the Michigan coach...
Inappropriate things.
Allegedly. And I'm doing the math on the work that I'm doing and the passion that I have to perfect my craft and the focus that I have to, you know, go after my dreams. And to know that someone, you know, who's the face of the program, leading, you know, student athletes, I'm going to be upset, right? Like, and exactly what we're talking about, like when you look at the dollar signs, I think it's hard, but I think ultimately as creatives, you're not the face of the program, right? You're not making decisions that, you know, somebody in that position would be. It is hard. It's like a balance, like a tough balance. And I think my advice to, you know, people is to A, not focus on those numbers, because at the end of the day, like as a creative, you're simply not going to ever reach those numbers. But it is an interesting thing to think about, right? When you break down how dollars are invested across a specific organization, forget college athletics, just like across an organization. Possibly. And I think there's a lot of like evaluation that leaders are having right now, that creatives are having, like how much, not even money, am I investing into this particular project, but how much time am I spending on this like halftime video or this post game video that it will in the grand scheme of things get a certain number of views versus this other big project that you just have to balance, because Justin, like you said, the content demands are just going up and up and up and up and up. And the amount of time we have in a day is not also increasing, right?
Right.
So I don't know. Those are just things that that's where my brain went.
I'm going to throw something in there though, because I remember, and I talk to buddies of mine all the time, and people always say, well, this doesn't lead to wins and losses and all of this, right? But when you think about it, like...
Wait, what doesn't lead to wins and losses?
Like the creative, right?
Disagree.
I do, especially in the college world where it becomes like, how does your program look?
You know,
what's the energy? What's the passion? But you know what it also contributes to? The money that comes in. Because when you think about...
Butts and seats.
Well, butts and seats, but the butts and seats don't match the sponsorship. And those dollars go
but
to
without
what?
The butts and
salaries.
Seats, the sponsorships don't matter, right? If you don't have humans watching the eyeballs of the sponsors for said event, right? It's all a circle.
It's all a circle. I agree with that. But I used to always hear that, well, you know, if you spend this time to make this look good, like nobody's gonna care, blah, 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 blah. Trying to discredit how important creative is. But if those ribbon boards, who a creative had to create, whether in-house or outsourced, right? We're contributing to coaches making this money while we sit here and wonder if we got enough money at the end of the month. And we're being told that, yeah, I mean, it's not that important.
Be grateful, yeah.
But if somebody's giving you $300,000 to advertise, but I'm responsible for creating the assets for it, but I get, you know, I should just be grateful that I'm helping someone create assets to put millions of dollars in a single person's pocket, right? And so they may be coaching a team, but I'm also, you know, if I'm the creative that's helping with recruiting, and we're talking college world now, I'm helping with recruiting, I'm shooting their assets, and, you know, signing day was not long ago. Like those assets had to be created, and how much are we spending on those recruiting weekends that bring in really great players, hopefully, to be coached by millionaire coaches? And now you throw NIL in there. These are kids that they're going to make more money than you've made the last 5 or 10 years in that role. Now, they're putting their bodies on the line. They spend a lot more time preparing to actually compete. But let's not forget that that video board is on and there's an intro video that it has to be. And there are commercials or ads or ribbon boards or scores or individual. There's so much that we contribute to. And it's not saying like, oh, creatives should be making $250 a year. I mean, that would be great. As an in-house creative, I'll go back tomorrow.
I don't know. I don't know if you can get me to go back tomorrow.
What I'm saying, a salary of $250 to do what I used to do, I'm gone. Thinking about how much of a jump that would be from what I made to that amount.
Which school and which city?
I mean,
that might change my answer too.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the cost of living, right?
I mean, $250 in Austin, I can do a little something with that. You know what I'm saying? So but that's not happening. Like, they're not paying the creatives because I've never understood either why we don't get dollars earmarked to do the work that makes more money. Like, we will crush the creative team and say, oh, well, we only need 2 graphic designers. And it's like, but we give them the work of 10 people and expect them to just churn out different stuff, same brand, but, oh, we need to switch it up. Oh, but let's do this with interns and pay them nothing. And it's like, I just wish that they cared a lot more than they do and in invested into what we do. So that's my spiel on that. I could go for hours and hours and hours on how creatives are very undervalued.
Well, I think it also people lose sight of the fact that creative is a revenue generating arm of the organization to a lot of what you just talked about with sponsorships and creative and, you know, shows, in-game shows, ads, social. There's a lot of revenue generating opportunities. And I think these athletic departments still have to operate as a business that also had. And I think this is something I started to realize when I was at the Celtics. There's different arms of the business that are not revenue finance is not revenue generating, so to speak. They are important.
They control
part of,
it, but they don't
they're an important
generate
part of
it.
The organization. They don't generate revenue. And like community is a great part of the organization. Mm-hmm. They don't generate as much revenue. So creative and content is the opportunity that can generate revenue. And it's just hard because I do think a lot of the funds that come in, especially for like football, come with the being earmarked for coaches' salaries or something like that. That's the reason why they're giving, right? So there's still an element of the athletic departments are a business, which is why it's also interesting to me to hear about some of the VC that's coming in and how all that's going to work itself out and create even more complication to all these universities, athletic departments, and NIL and how all this shakes out. But I do think there's an element that I don't think a lot of people understand that it's still a business, and the athletic department is a business that has certain funds that has to run, unlike our government that doesn't follow a budget. But
we're not going there.
Yeah. So a lot of them have to be fiscally responsible, and they have the funds that they have. And that's what the budget that you get and CapEx and all this stuff that you has to fit within that in order for it to function properly.
But
so,
are they really being fiscally responsible? Because
who is they?
The departments, these schools.
It's very
because
dependent on what
there
conference
aren't,
you're talking about.
There aren't
about.
A lot of schools that are in the black when it comes to athletics. And somehow they figure it out. Like, if I'm in overdraft, which some of these, I just read where there's a school that I won't name, how allegedly they lost. Well, I'll speak of 2 situations. One school, they were reported to be $27 million in the hole, and one was $7.7 million in the hole. The one that was they said that all of the numbers hadn't been like calculated, and what they were looking at the wrong chart of like, this is Because people have different fiscal years.
You got me ready to Google.
I can tell you offline who those two institutions are. And one institution was like 40 in the red, and they won a national championship. And it's like, how are we like handling, like, how is this even possible? But you also have to realize that some of the funds come from different places, so the reporting isn't always accurate.
Yep.
So they can only report on what, if it's a state school, what the state money is, right? But they're not calculating how much private funds contribute to all of that. But if they were to ask the top 15 schools in college football right now, like if we got an honest assessment, one you wouldn't be able to get because they're a private institution and they don't have to report all of their stuff. But I guarantee you, the money spent on football alone right now would just, it would blow everybody's mind. I mean,
oh yeah,
I would say you probably at least have to spend over $100 million now per season. I mean, if you got a head coach making $8 to $10 million, you know, there's one coach who makes about 14 to 16 million, depends on how successful he is at, you know, any given year. And that's with bonus, without bonus, right? But you got 75 people on your staff. You got 9 position coaches. Well, now it's limitless. So how many coaches do you actually have? So the coaching salaries alone, that's probably anywhere between, you know, probably about 30. Then you got salary for the student athletes. Now you have rev share and NIL. So how much are we spending on that? And then you have the actual travel to games. You have the staffing on games. Like, how much is one football season, SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, ACC, does it cost per year? Not, oh, this is what we generate, you know, after all the bills. Like, how much does it actually cost? What are the bills? Like, all together, from January through December, what's that bill like?
And I'm wondering, too, I feel like the level of competition when it comes to in-game entertainment has also gone up a notch, too.
Yep.
In what way?
Which is great. I mean, between light shows and
fireworks, drone shows,
anything and everything flyovers along those lines, and maybe that's where some of that investment is going.
But it still
people don't necessarily see hit the bottom line. But those things are not cheap. But it's the game experience to attract the athletes to your school, right?
Yeah,
in some fashion. So it there's
and
definitely
fans to
different
the seats.
Because in game is still important,
but the creative's impact too.
Yeah, I mean, we got these networks now, but I mean, if you look at a school like Georgia, that's still 93,000 to 97,000 people 7 times a year, or 6 times because they lose a home game, that you have to entertain. Like, the game is 60 minutes of actual playing time, but you're there for 6 hours on a Saturday. You know, you got a 4-hour game, hour or two before. You know, well, the game's probably like 3 hours now because they've sped it up a bit. But you got pregame, postgame, right? You have to entertain them from 2 hours when the gates open through the end.
Is it really 2 hours before the game starts?
Yeah, that's when gates open.
Depends on the school. I feel like 90.
I thought it was 60 to 90 was pretty normal.
Yeah, some might be 90. I think Auburn was 90. I think it depends on the game, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know at Texas and Georgia, when I was there, it was, I think, 2 hours. So it's interesting. But
the questions you're asking, Darius, are, I think questions that creative leaders are also asking, like, how much does it cost for us to produce said intro videos, to pay my staff, to, you know, buy new equipment, buy new things? Like, but it's hard because, like, I mean, you're dealing with limited budgets that are
getting
probably
cut
being even
year.
Trimmed even more, even but the more. Demands are going up and up and up and up. So it's like, at what point will, you know, the seams burst? And I think about almost like the balance of less is more. Like, I wonder, and I feel like a trend that is happening, not just in the creative industry, but in like the world, is we know a lot of content ends up on social media and all these different social mm-hmm. platforms. But I do feel like there is an exhaustion that people are having from social media. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if a trend will be a movement away from social media and more so towards right things that I think can actually help prevent burnout for creatives, like hobbies that don't require a computer, right? Like sewing and like even seeing maybe some of that within some of the creative trends. Like I remember a couple years ago, the 49ers like had embroidery and some of like their design work, like physical embroidery and like some of their design assets and things like that. And I do think there's going to be a little bit of a shift to that. And I'm also wondering, like, in the same breath of like the conversation, like how is that going to affect like cost and time and execution on like all these things? Because sometimes like handmade takes longer, right? Yes. So, but it's like the value of handmade is kind of like going up right now. So it's, I don't know, that's something that like I've been kind of mulling over, and I'm so curious like what the future of social is going to be, because I do think there's like a sense of exhaustion, even in myself, where I'm like, oh, should I delete Instagram? Like, should I delete all the apps? Should I just like remove myself from everything? Like, I've been questioning that lately because I'm like, it is exhausting, but I don't know what y'all think on that.
I think it would require, and going back to the whole sports thing, especially college, it would require a pause necessary for people to actually evaluate the full scale of what is actually happening, right? Like, they don't care about the overload or the burnout, or as long as it's getting done. Like, they don't care about the quality of it. Like, they don't care that volume. That's all they care about. Like, turn up the speakers louder, turn up the amount of stuff that you turn in, because we have to do more. And it's like, do you care about the people? Or do you just care about, hey, I mean, people are paying a lot of money to come to these games, so we got to do everything. And I get it. Like, I love a great college atmosphere, no matter what sport it is, whether it's soccer, shout out to your partner, or any sport, right? Track and field. I mean, you take me anywhere, it's going to be a great time. And it's not just the entertainment value. I just enjoy really good competition and sport and environment. Right. But do they care about the people who are making this happen? And the creatives that I talk to, whether it's live production, post-production, television production, like, nobody cares. Like, just get it done. Stay within this budget and get it done. How much can we get out of this? Like, how much can we squeeze this to get it done? A game like Texas versus Georgia, or in Oklahoma versus, Michigan. Like, those people are trying to get as much out of that opportunity as they possibly can. And for what? It's like, win, lose, or draw. Like, do people care about, oh, this was a great atmosphere? Or do they care about the scoreboard at the end of the day? Like, so we have to have leaders who actually take a step back and say, I need to see like what the true essence of this culture and environment is, so that I'm getting the best out of everybody and not just the most out of everybody.
I think there's also a mindset shift that needs to happen, because I'm just thinking about my time, you know, with the Warriors even. And like we had like so much content some days. Like I felt like I had a never ending list of like videos that I need to execute on. And my soul was pained when I felt like I didn't put like my all into a piece. Mm-hmm. But I needed to have a mindset shift, because if I continued to work that way, I would burn out. Like I did burn out at one point. And if I had any advice like to my younger self or anybody listening, it would be to remember that like there is only so much time in the day, and not every single project or video or asset that you're working on is going to be the holy grail of content, right? And I feel like
tomorrow.
Yeah, like I had to just accept, okay, the deadline's coming. I only have so much time to work on this. This is not like award winning for today, unfortunately, right? Yeah. Like it is what it is. Get it done. And I think that's something that I wish I would have learned a little earlier in my career, because I think I was so focused on like trying to outdo myself with every single project that some projects simply, they're not meant to be outdone. They're meant to be, you know, completed. Put stuff on the timeline, slap the logo on, add some music, keep it simple and keep it moving. And that is something that like your efficiency as a creative will help you, right? Like sometimes that can actually like elevate you. The more that you're able to get things done at an efficient way without kind of like dwelling on every single detail of the creative process, I think I wish I would have done that and remembered that.
And that's where that automation stuff, going back to Justin's app, is like finding ways that you can have stuff automated. Like imagine if you didn't have to go and create a lower third every time that you were doing an interview. Like there was a system where you can, you know, you have all the names already typed out, sport, you know, whatever info you want included, and it can just spit it out, right? It's automated. Or an intro for all 15, 20 sports of a school has, or if you're Stanford, 97 sports. Sorry, Stanford. But imagine if you had that type of automation that you didn't have to spend that, like you're getting that time back. So instead of 10 minutes to create a new lower third, you just go and select it out of a library. So that's
Mogurt.
Right.
Yep.
Where you just drag and drop. Like, hey, is it going to be 3 or 5 seconds? Boom, it's done. So having that type of automation and things that can buy back time, that where you can, I remember being at Georgia and it's like, man, if I could not have to go do this practice report because I don't have, you know, someone else who can do it, or I got to go walk a student through it because they haven't done it before, right? I could be spending more time on an intro video or something that I felt deserved more time, you could get that time back. Like camera settings, like even cameras have gotten better with preserving, you know, they've also gotten better at auto white balance. So just things that, you know, and I'm speaking of.
Just don't shoot on auto.
Huh?
Just don't shoot on auto.
I mean, hey, it depends. Depends on if you're in a control environment or if, you know.
Yes, fair.
And if you don't shoot on auto, just make sure you have something to white balance off of.
Yeah.
So it's exciting and scary at the same time, you know, to find new tools and things that I think if we look at it as, oh, how is AI going to replace us? Then you're going to be living in fear versus, how can I adapt, use these tools to help make my life so much better? Like one of my buddies was just telling me about a program the other day for photographers who do headshots. Like, there's a program that you can go on, you take it, and it will remove the backdrop, put. I'm like, oh, that would be solid. Like, you don't have to go in and edit every single headshot and try to make sure, like, these are things that, you know, some people will. About a year ago, everybody was using the AI headshot type of thing. That doesn't look real. So, I mean, if we don't want authentic things, use those. But if it's something that can make it look as real as possible, go for that.
It's funny. I feel like we've kind of come full circle. We're talking about when Karina mentioned that things that stand out on Instagram or whatever social app you're on are really about craft. And mm-hmm. I think using AI about focused on workflow enhancements and improvements from that perspective. But I do hope that people are still focusing on craft, even with AI, because when it comes down to it, your time and energy spent on building your skill set is still going to be super valuable. And if anything, I almost think that AI has created an opportunity where your craft is more valuable, because anybody can do certain things really quick, but they can't do the deep things that craft requires you to spend time and energy and effort to improve on, as well as you can once you spend that time and energy on it. I was talking to somebody a couple months ago who was early on, and they were nervous about feeling behind. Mm-hmm. And I tried to reiterate to them that I didn't get my first full-time job until I was 26. So the most important thing to me early on in your career is having a good boss and having opportunity.
Yes. And
part of that opportunity is live experience, opportunities to try new things, exposure to things within your craft, whether that's the, you know, switchers or editing tools or things that you wouldn't have if you went to a smaller opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I hate the word smaller, to a different opportunity at like a Division II, Division III, and you were like creative director there. You don't necessarily get those same opportunities. So there's value in all of that if you use it wisely and invest in yourself and commit yourself to growing and developing to build your craft so that mm-hmm. you can keep growing. So I hope AI doesn't cloud, especially the younger creatives' minds when it comes to that kind of stuff, because there's still a ton of value in people building their skill sets and creating in their voice.
Yeah. I agree wholeheartly.
Amazing advice. Especially what resonates for me, Justin, is what you mentioned about finding a great boss, manager, supervisor, whatever we want to call it. Mm-hmm. Because I think and maybe not a great boss is the word, like to your point, you know, maybe starting out somewhere smaller. I'm with you about like it's less about a smaller organization or a different league than the one that you would like to be in, right? Like the big leagues versus mm-hmm. something else. It's the right opportunity for you at that point in your career, mm-hmm. right? I think that's something, like looking back, I'm so grateful that I started with the manager that I started. Like my first full-time gig was someone who was extremely supportive, extremely open to allowing me to be creative, but still giving me like that practical feedback mm-hmm. of like, hey, for next time, let's make sure we execute on this, you know, or let's produce this feature a little bit differently, right? I had such a great foundation and it was like such a transparent like relationship. Shout out Stan Fracker, who's with the, you know, Detroit Tigers now. But I just, looking back, it was like, that was such a great manager for like my first like big girl job, because I was able to explore, figure out kind of my style while trying new things and not being like afraid, you know? So I think that resonates about finding, you know, the right fit, especially with like who's going to be like leading the team that you're on.
Yeah. And sometimes you don't learn that until you have a bad one.
Totally. You don't learn that until you're in the role. But I think paying attention, like writing those things down, like on your journal and your notes, like what you do like, what you don't like about said manager, like a lot of sometimes it is trial and error, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And that's not limited to the creative industry. That's like every role, you know,
yeah, for sure.
Every single one of us is just like, I think we've had, a good manager. We've had, you know, some that aren't as great. So
some of us have never had a good manager. I'm just kidding.
Really?
I'm only kidding. I've had one or two, one and a half, maybe.
I mean, I'm sure. But listen, here's my policy. If you're saying I've never had a good manager, maybe the problem is you.
I was just going to say.
Just saying.
Like, I can definitely.
You always know. Like, you've seen or heard. Like, the person that's always complaining about, you know, I need to speak to a manager. Well,
yeah.
Ma'am or sir, maybe you're the problem.
Yeah, I think, and I won't say that I've never had I've had some really good managers, and I've had some that I honestly want to punch in the face. That's more of a me thing than them sometimes.
No.
But sometimes it's them. And that's just me being completely honest, right? But like I said, sometimes you don't know. You know what I'm saying? And we have to be honest about that, right? Like sometimes it wasn't a good, I mean, it was like oil and water, right? So to your point, Karina, I think that some advice that we have to give going into these interviews, like, don't be so fixated on the where, like, and don't be so logo. Fixated on what they're asking you, the logos, or what they're asking you. You got to ask them the right questions too, because like,
correct.
I was just telling somebody this literally yesterday, like, you have to, like, you don't have to take every opportunity that's given to you. Like, just because it's available doesn't mean that you have to take it. Like, is this a good fit for you? Like, are you worried about, oh, is it Texas? Is it Georgia? Is it Michigan? Is it USC? That's a dream. No, throw all that out of the window. Can I be great here? Can I learn from someone here? Can I be myself here, or do I have to become something else? Is there going to be some type of, I won't say work-life balance, because that doesn't exist a whole lot in sports. As much as we try to, we need to create, it don't exist. Like, ask yourself the questions and ask them the questions. Because a lot of times I think we've been conditioned to just, hey, this is a great opportunity, take it if they offer it. Like, no, ask questions. Like, you're going to separate yourself, because 90% of the people aren't going to ask those right questions. They're going to ask those, what's work-life balance here? Like, that's not the way to ask it. It's like, hey,
not
how much?
Oh, yeah, the voice.
You know, will I have a life outside of this office? Like, what's the workload requirement?
I think that's a valid question, though.
Yes, but I'm saying don't just ask it as a, what's work-life balance?
Yeah, know? Off the top, you mean.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, how do you, and I posted this on LinkedIn of like, people, you know, the phrase, it's not how you start, it's how you finish, right? But nobody cares about what's in the middle, and that's what you should be focused on. And the way that you ask that is, it's not just, oh, hey, Karina, how do I get a job like yours? No, X that. Like, no, talk about your journey here. That's what I love about this podcast, is that each guest, we always ask about their journey. How did you get there? And like, what were some of the roadblocks? Or maybe, you know, what catapulted you? Like, some people have a quick ascension to where they are, right? Whether they knew somebody, whether they, you know, opportunity met, you know, they had a great opportunity, preparation and opportunity, luck, all those things. But like, how are we asking those questions to get the answers that we really want? Because if it's like, oh, how do I become a creative director? hey, you got 5 minutes or you got 5 hours to talk about how that actually happened? How it took 10 years to get to the second level of, you know, to get promoted, or 5 years or 15 years to, you know, what steps did you have to, like, are we wanting the real answer, or do we want it microwave to say, oh, well, I'm just going to go get a job over here. I'm going to leave after 2 years. Then I'm going to go here. I'm going to leave after a year. And I'm going to stack all these positions. And then they're just automatically going to give it to me because I have all these. Like, no. Like, are you learning anything from these experiences? Or are you just checking off times to add up to whatever you think is required? So questioning the people who are interviewing you is a must. Ask really good questions. Don't just ask fluffy things that you get from, you know, somebody who was somewhere else that doesn't have anything to do with this. That is universal.
From ChatGPT.
Yeah, hey, I mean, they may. I mean, that's where some people are like so microwavable with ChatGPT to say, oh, well, come up with 5 questions that I can ask in this interview. And they just ask that. Like, I was reading something. I was watching this video of a guy that I used to do some work for. My stepdad works for him. And he was, the video was like a year old. Like, they were doing a family, like, recounting or whatever. And he was talking about this one instance of his brother who's an attorney. Who, well, he's an attorney as well, but he did railroad law. He said that one time he prepared this one witness, like he over-prepared him to the point where when they got to court, he asked the man a question and he didn't even answer the question. He only gave him the rehearsed answer.
Oh, no.
So sometimes we're rehearsing instead of just being natural and asking the questions that we really want the answer to. So that would be my unsolicited advice to all creatives and people who are, you know, going into this new year, looking for new opportunity, interviewing for jobs, or even hiring people. Like, the questions that you ask have to get you the answers that you want. And if you don't get the answer, ask them until you get it. And if you don't, it may not be the person for you. You know, you may be trying to fill a job or a role super quick. And, you know, the old saying goes, hire slow, fire fast, right? Like, you may, if you don't ask all the questions, you may be out of there really fast. Depending on where you are, they may try to fire you for calls or non-calls.
Well, and that doesn't stop at the, like, the interview process too, right? Right? Like, absolutely. Like Karina was saying when she was doing the editing and she wanted to, she was trying something different or trying to push a project that maybe didn't need to be pushed, but that's her trying to grow and figure out, try something different. Absolutely. And so, you know, if you know that up front that, hey, this can be a churn and burn project, churn and burn it and, you know, keep moving along. I want to get to 2026 and what you think is upcoming for 2026. I feel like the pendulum swung
so
really
fast.
Far one way. Yes. As far as AI is concerned, as far as, I don't know, toxicity is concerned with how people treat each other. But curious to hear your thoughts on what you see coming in 2026. Karina, start with you.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting. It's hard to predict the future, but I do see a trend towards more like agentic AI, like prompt based, where you can say, like, I'm trying to almost Darius what you were talking about. And I think there's like tools and plugins that are out there, at least from a post-production standpoint, where you say, edit my rough cut like this, right? I think there's going to be a like little bit more. Yeah, like more chatbot, like, hey, I'm trying to accomplish XYZ. Can you show me how, or can you assist me how, or what's the best way to? I feel like that's going to be useful. And I feel like there's going to be more of that, which is an interesting, like, again, a brain shift of sorts. Mm-hmm. But I also see it. That's why I really see, like, artificial intelligence holistically, like, whether that's assistive AI, generative AI, like agentic AI, like, it is my creative partner. And I think there's going to be more of that in 2026.
Imagine this. You got a team of 10. So instead of trying to, you know, introduce AI to get down to a team of 5, imagine if everybody had an AI partner, right? So imagine if the 3 of us were on a team. That basically expands our team to 6, right? You got an assistant editor, you got the editor producer, all that. Like, if we looked at it, like I said earlier, it's all about perspective. Like, how can we introduce AI without trying to replace people with it, but expand what our capabilities are? So I would love to see something like that where we partner with it instead of trying to, you know, replace. But for 2026, I'm going to swing the pendulum a little bit the other way. I think that you're probably going to see a lot more. I think with everything going on, it's going to force a lot more of us to partner with each other. Like, human interaction is going to possibly increase because a lot of people are, you know, losing jobs. A lot of people are, you know, losing opportunity. Like, I probably worked maybe a third this year than I have the last couple years. I mean, I made it through the year, knock on wood.
Yeah.
But the opportunity for, you know, this person and this person, instead of us going at it as a one person project, hey, we can go after some bigger projects together and make more than if we
more had collaboration.
Yeah, collaborative approach to get to where we want to go. Like, bigger, better, expand what we can do. Because, you know, people always say that, like, freelance videographers, you can find one of those on Fiverr, or a freelance editor you can find on like these sites. But what can you offer beyond what you're used to offering to elevate and expand what that package offering is? So that would be my hope for what 2026 brings, that we kind of get over ourselves and start collaborating with other creatives to do bigger and better work, because those opportunities are still out there. Like, I know Nike is still hiring production people that are not in-house. Like, they collaborate with different people all over the world. Under Armour's doing that. You know, these big companies are doing that, even though the iPhones and Androids have gotten so good with video and photo, there's still an opportunity for us to do bigger and better things than what we're used to. And I'm looking forward to Adobe dropping their prices, but that's another episode.
And on that note, Justin, what are you looking forward to in 2026?
I'm looking forward to Adobe's stock rising.
That's oh my gosh. Serious. Okay, I'm going to exit this conversation in 3.
Shout out to Adobe. 1.
No, I'm just kidding. I think to your point, Darius, I think the agency model is changing a little bit, especially for people who are freelancers or external for these sports organizations. And there's a reason I've intentionally stayed small. It's for the capability to be flexible, and I can bring in more people where I, you know, scale up when it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I think having the ability to have like a core focus and executing within that core focus is going to be more and more helpful, because I do see quite a few people who are like, well, I can do it all. And generalists have had opportunities left and right. And to what you were just saying, well, you can find any freelancer, editor, videographer on Fiverr or whatever, so you have to bring something different. I think people need to identify what their really core strengths are so that they mm-hmm. can be known to be hired for something in particular. I've seen more uptick in people reaching out about templates, which is great and cool. And I hope people continue to think about what efficiency looks like. And as creatives get more business savvy on creating in a way that works for them and their university or sports team, and having a little bit more of a mindset around finances and how that stuff all works together, so that they can pitch and make things happen to help alleviate some of their challenges, is going to be huge for teams in this. I don't want to call it a volatile market, but it can definitely feel that way sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't disagree at all. I think that we have to continue to look at how we can always try to stay at least lock in step with what's going on, or try to get a step ahead. And I think that, you know, I think to Karina's point earlier about the volume and the overwhelm and the, you know, with social media, and everyone thinks that we should, you know, do more of this, we should do more of that, and, you know, we need 50 posts a day. It's like, what are we doing? Like, I saw a podcast clip the other day. This actor and rapper was like, we're not supposed to take in all of this as much as we do. Like, step away from it, put the phone down, put the computer down, go out and take a walk. And it's like, that is the type of things that we need to be looking at, is how can we get away from it some more? How can we find healthy communities? Not just, oh, let me go over here and get something from these people. Like, I'm going to go over here because I need to get something. Like, being in community, where if we're in a room silent for an hour, it's fine. Like, there's a group here that I'm a part of, and it's called Creative Mornings. There are 250 chapters around the world, but the chapter here has a club that's called Analog Reading. So 10, 15, 20 people show up every week to read. They're not reading the same thing. They're in the same place, but they're not reading together. Like, they're not reading out loud, but so that's like a silent community. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's what you need. Cause I ask the question this all the time. It's like, when's the last time that you took a second, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes to just, no phone, no computer, no internet, no music, to just sit in silence?
Well, that can help with your inspiration too, and where you're pulling stuff from. If we're always just, you know, we've talked about that before, regurgitating the same content online, all looking at the same stuff. You're chasing
what is trending. Oh, well, this person did this. I need to go do this. I need to go get this camera because I saw five people do this. Oh, I need to. It's like, no. Have you ever just took a step back, zoomed out, and say, what works best for me? Like, and reset. Like, when's the last time that a person took a deep breath and just sat in that moment of silence? Because the world is so noisy. Like, our lives are so noisy. If you got kids, if you have pets, if you have, you know, a business, and always got, you know, I love sitting here and muting my laptop so that I don't hear the email for at least a few minutes. Like, how often can you step into some silence to reset, to gravitate towards your inner self? And that's not on some, you know, meditation. I mean, meditation is good. I mean, I've stepped into that a lot more this year and going on walks and all that. But just sometimes just getting a frame in video terms, right? A frame of silence. And it can make a world of difference. Like sometimes we're on go so much that we don't even know what a stop sign is. Like a lot of us don't even stop at stop signs. We look both ways before we even get to it and then just do a rolling stop, right?
Yeah. But
can you stop for a minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and schedule that into your day to where you can actually reset before you get started at your desk? I'm going to sit there. If you're a spiritual person, maybe you pray before you get started, or you just sit there and just close your eyes and just kind of reset. We have to start doing that more, or we're going to continue to be overstimulated, overwhelmed, overworked, burnout, and our mind just, it's going to be racing. You're not going to sleep well because your mind is constantly going. So that would be my advice and what I would hope more of us will do. And I hope that we get great opportunities in the next year to do the things that we're striving to do. And tell people what you're trying to do. Like, I remember you telling us, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, like, hey, I want to create these templates and do an app and do this. And to see that come to fruition is amazing, because you said you wanted to do something, you put in the work to do it, and we see the outcome and product of that. So I want us to...
It took me way longer than I thought it was going to take me.
Hey, but some people would have quit.
Yeah.
Some people would have gave up after a month, like, man, this isn't worth the time.
Yeah. Oh, I've definitely lost money on it so far.
I'm sure.
I've lost a lot of time. My wife's looked at me sideways a couple times, and I'm like, it's just something that I feel like has value. So I'm going to keep going at it for a little bit longer.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, no, it's, I know we all want instant gratification on stuff and all of that. So, yeah, no, I think that's all super valuable, and I hope 2026 is a good year for everybody.
And last thing I will say is I hope that 2026, well, I know that it will bring amazing guests to the Creative Sports Podcast. We already have a few lined up for the new year. We're going to have some great ones in February, March. The ones that we have in January, looking forward to that, and looking forward to the next season of this podcast. Hopefully we can continue to educate and motivate and congratulate and all the things that this podcast does for those who, are our listeners who listen every week or have been here since day one. Thank you. Thank you to Justin, Brock, Karina, Garrett, myself. I'm going to thank me. Like,
yes, you should. Thank you.
For bringing this podcast and the crew behind the scenes, the editors, the people who are trying to raise funds to make this happen and get sponsors. Man, this is going to be great. I can't wait for people to continue to, plug in and play this thing out. And hopefully this is the best season yet that we have in store.
And if you haven't listened to some of the other episodes, go back and listen to the full library. We're on, 150, 60 something.
Yeah, we lost count.
So, yeah.
Some people don't make it past 25 episodes.
Yeah. And I will fully take the blame for the months long hiatus here because sometimes things just get busy. And when, this is something that we really enjoy doing. And highlighting and spotlighting people and hanging out and having conversations that hopefully beneficial across the creative landscape. So, it's cool to get back with you guys and chat about all this stuff and stay connected to the creative community and around the country. So,
absolutely. And shout out to all the guests that we've had on all of the episodes. Like, we've been fortunate enough to not have to repeat a guest aside from, the host, the co-host coming together for multiple episodes. But like a lot of times that's rare. And we still have so many people that we haven't even tapped into. So if you're creative out there, you're ready to share your story, you got something good going on, or you know, you just want to come out of the shadows, reach out to us, and, you know, you could be a guest on the next season of Creative Sports Podcast. So with that, we're out.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.